I'm going to be speaking about preliminary results about some data that we've collected in this past spring in based out of Beltsville, Maryland. The data is collected on the eastern shore on the Delmarva Peninsula, right across the Bay Bridge. It's a collaboration between folks in the Hydrology and Remote Sensing Laboratory, Jim Reeves from the Environmental Management and Byproducts Utilization Laboratory, and then collaborators at two remote sensing technology companies, Varis Technologies with Eric Lund and the Spectere Corporation with Oliver Weatherby. I'll describe a little bit more about those as we go along. What we wanted to do was look at various remote sensing technologies for determination of soil organic carbon. So we're still talking about organic carbon similar to the previous speaker, but now we're talking about the field scale, and we're talking about using diffuse reflectance to correlate with soil carbon observations. And so maybe I should skip ahead a slide and then come back and just give you a little bit of background on use of diffuse reflectance to determine soil properties, not only soil organic carbon, but pretty much any soil property that you can have a lab test for, be it particle size distribution, even some biological characteristics now, certainly other lab test results such as iron, aluminum, calcium. To a differing degrees, these factors correlate with spectral reflectance, determined primarily by the reflection, the interaction of light with chemical bonds up in the mid-infrared region, but then in the near-infrared resulting in overtones of differences in the percent of light reflected off the soil surface. So just as if you look at a high organic carbon soil, it tends to look dark to your eye, looking in the visible wavelengths. Extending that a bit beyond what your eye can see into the near infrared and then quantifying it mathematically in terms of percent reflectance. So what you do is you generally, this is an approach kind of begun by Keith Shepherd out in ICRAF in Kenya and various other researchers working with ground soil samples in the lab, obtaining reflectance spectra for the soil samples, also processing those same samples for laboratory analysis, and then using data mining techniques to correlate between the two. So typically where you'd use, say, a multivariate regression to correlate several factors with the response variable, data mining, such as partial least squares regression, is using similar correlations, but where the factors are many and unknown. So in data mining, you're basically looking for variability in spectral response. You're not quite sure exactly what it's attributed to, but in deriving a good correlation, then you can sample an unknown soil sample falling within that range and get a fairly good estimate of what the chemical properties are. It's quick and it's non-destructive, and it's cheap, which is why people are liking the technique. Generally, for organic carbon, results tend to be good across research, tend to be R squares about 8 to 9, 0.8 to 0.9. So organic carbon is fairly responsive to this type of spectral analysis. It's important while you're looking at any of these and deriving your correlation data set, like any lab analysis, you want to have a good range of response data. If you're only looking at a set of samples, 400 samples in the soil organic carbon ranges from 1.5 to 2.5, you're not going to get as good a fit as if the carbon ranges from 0.5% to 5%, for example. So our objectives were to compare technologies. The most typical of these is the in-lab near-infrared between 400 and 2,500 nanometers, so that's from visible to near-infrared. Typically, this is done with an ASD spectrophotometer. Mid-infrared, beyond that, the difference being in mid-infrared that it's more sensitive to water, and also you need to have just air in between your sensor and the sample. On the in-field, on the go, near-infrared, this is technology that Varis has developed. Eric Lund is here in the audience if you have more questions about it. But they take advantage of the fact that near-infrared can be remotely sensed through a sapphire window, and they've developed a pretty nice technology where they're dragging a shank behind a tractor and mapping soil reflectance on the go as they move through the field. Airborne near-infrared, we work with the Spectir Corporation. They have a complete range now, hyperspectral sensor that's an airborne platform, gives about a 2-meter resolution. So the context of this research is within our larger project of Choptank River Conservation Effects Assessment Project. It's a benchmark study watershed. We've been working there for about 3 years. A lot of projects going on out there. And the data was collected in April of 2007. Here you see the Choptank River watershed outlined on the right, Chesapeake Bay in the middle, and the black diamond there on the left is Washington, D.C. So it's about an hour and a half from our research facilities over to the watershed. This is just kind of a background. If you're interested in the larger Choptank River watershed project, I have some handouts I could give you, but we're looking at water quality and landscape modeling and cover cropping and a variety of issues. The red boxes here are the target areas for the airborne hyperspectral data collection that we made. You can see the other stuff here is going on related to cover cropping analysis, but then the yellow boxes underneath the red target areas are 5 fields that were tilled in the springtime and were bare soil at the time of sampling. And so we decided to use this airborne hyperspectral acquisition that we actually contracted for other purposes looking at cover crops to also look at bare soil properties, expanding this kind of point technique people are using in the laboratory to geospatial distributed analysis, seeing if we could look at soil carbon and landscape. So airplane flight paths were flown over the fields, and this is kind of a snapshot of one of the bands. Pixel size here is 2 meters. You can see the coverage isn't very wide, but you can get a nice snapshot of individual fields. I've made this a real color image, so you can see various areas of grass around barnyards and fields and bare fields. So we'll get back to that data. How did we select the 5 fields? Basically, we looked over where our flight paths were going to be, went around the watershed, found farmers that were willing to collaborate, and found 5 fields that had been recently tilled. So here, this is a conventionally managed field, had been in corn production. And you can see, just with your eye looking at this photo, you can see a fair amount of color variability in the field. The question is, if you quantify that color variability from visible into near-infrared, what does that tell you about soil properties? In particular, today I'll be talking about organic carbon. So here's an example of one field and the sampling points that we established in it. You can see with this high-resolution imagery, you can see drainage paths and saturated areas in the middle. I'm not sure how to get this. There we go. In the middle here, this is a Delmarva Bay with a small drainage area coming off of it. These are residual wetlands in the landscape. Here's a higher, drier area. So you can see here variability in the image. The question is, how does it relate to organic carbon and other properties? There's another field and sampling points we established in them. So we chose 5 fields and we sampled grid location at about 400 points. And then we overlap this with our 4 types of remote sensing of soil reflectance. So the first thing that happened was Varis went through the fields with their tractor on a kind of parallel transect through the fields. A little closer look here, you can see the cart pulls a slot through the ground at a depth of about 7 centimeters, and here's the spectral sensing equipment with fiber optic cables leading down to reflectance measurement on the shank buried in the ground here. They also measure electrical conductivity between 2 disks on either side, measure electrical conductivity of the soil between the 2. So this is something they've kind of optimized over the last few years. Then we go out to those locations. Since they're all tilled soils, we weren't really worried about sampling depth, right? All of these soils have been inverted and thoroughly mixed within the past couple of weeks. So we went to the areas that had been stirred up by the Varis cart and hand-sampled soils in the pretty intensive grid that you saw in the previous images. Then here I managed to catch the airplane flying overhead at the same time. We were out there on the same day collecting the remote sensing imagery from the airborne platform. Took the soils back to the lab, passed them through a 4-millimeter sieve to remove any large organic matter or stones. And in the case of the airborne platform, that would be sensing surface residue and large organic matter in addition to the small samples, so that's something to take into account. Those were scanned for mid-infrared in their moist state. Then the soils were ground, were oven-dried, ground, sieved through 2 millimeters, scanned again with mid-infrared and near-infrared in the lab. We determined carbon content by LECO dry combustion and particle size distribution by hydrometer methods, still underway. Nutrient content we sent out to the University of Delaware Soils Laboratory. So today I'll be talking about the LECO data and the organic matter data. Here is the set of 400 samples color-coded to the different 5 fields. So you see we got a fair range of organic carbon ranging from about 0.5% at, this is actually an organic farmer who's been in transition, and this is a heavily tilled field, irrigated corn-soybean rotation, and I was surprised, at how low his soil organic carbon was on this site. And then ranging up to about 2%. So we had a relatively small, but we're fairly pleased with the range of soil organic carbon we received here. If you bring this back out to the landscape, I've size coded these dots here for organic carbon. I apologize for not putting on a scale, but this is basically around 0.5% to 1%, and this is about 2% on the larger scale, 2.5% on the largest. So the question arises, how does this relate back to characteristics in the landscape, microtopography, or history of organic matter additions that relate to soil characteristics? In terms of the partial lead squares regression correlating the reflectance data to the observed lab data, what gave us the best results was the mid-infrared. Here we have actual percent carbon on the x-axis measured in the lab by the LECO, and then predicted from PLS regression on the 420 samples with a one-out validation procedure here, R squared of 0.86. And we can get into detail in discussion afterwards about the various math treatments. We kind of use a shotgun approach that Jim Reeves has developed to look at a whole bunch of math treatments and getting fairly good results based on different second derivatives and first derivatives and degrees of smoothing. So there's a lot of discussion that could occur there. What we see here is the mid-infrared did pretty well, 0.86. The near-infrared, worse than we would expect. We'd expect this to be also about 0.8 or 0.9. A little surprise there. What's encouraging is that the airborne technology and the on-the-fly tractor technology does as good a job as the lab technology. So there does seem to be potential here for correlating this in the environment. How much time do I have left?
1 minute.
Okay. So just kind of in conclusion, there are some differences in the field here between carbon content by dry combustion versus organic matter. We're seeing some different ratios. You'd expect to see kind of a 2-to-1 ratio of organic matter to of carbon to organic matter. There's some variability in the fields. This might be due to differences in manuring history. The blue spots especially had heavy cow manure applied just previous to sampling. We're working at teasing out some of the differences in the data, kind of ongoing project, but in general, mid-infrared was giving us better results than near-infrared. The spatially distributed methods worked well, and we're trying to tease out why the results weren't quite as good as might be expected. Future work, we're going to rerun the statistics, get a little more specific about how we're making the comparisons, and then predict soil properties throughout each field based on the airborne data. So if we take these sampling points then and apply the correlations to the spectral data that we have at each one of these pixels, we should be able to come up with a map of soil carbon based on directly remotely sensed data. Then we can compare that to traditional Krieging methods on the observed data. You can see here there's kind of a flow path that seems to be associated with high organic carbon. We also have some elevation data associated with LIDAR, so we can get into questioning how the observed data is relating to variability in the field. So.